Hi, this is Nancy Clare. Welcome to episode 98 of Speaking of Mysteries. My guest today is Tana French, who's The Trespasser, a continuation of crime fiction novels about the characters in the Dublin murder squad and the crimes they encounter, has just been published. For those who are new to Tana's novels, instead of one lead character, the series revolves around the universe of the Dublin murder squad. So a secondary character in one novel might find herself the lead in the next. Such is the case with Antoinette Conway, who we met in Tana's previous novel, The Secret Place. Tana said that Antoinette was fun to write, and she sure is fun to read. Here's Tana French.
Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. I am so excited that we have Tana French on the line, and I want to wish her a happy pub day for The Trespasser, which was yesterday.
Thank you so much, and thanks a million for having me on.
Let's just jump right in. I think that you may have cracked the code to create the perfect series. Instead of one character, you created an alternate universe, the Dublin Murder Squad, that's not constrained by the space-time continuum. Was that your intention when you set about to write crime fiction?
I didn't really have an intention. I'm in awe of those authors who have like an outline and know what they're doing well in advance, but I don't work that way. I start a book, I've got the narrator, a very basic premise, and a core location. Setting matters a lot to me. And I just jump in and I hope there's a book there somewhere and I'll figure it out as I go. So I definitely didn't have like the intention for a series or for this kind of chain-linked semi-series that expands the world of the Dublin Murder Squad every time. What happened was I was getting towards the end of my first book, In the Woods, and I started thinking, well, if by any chance somebody wants a second book somewhere down the line, what will I do? And the classic thing to do is stick with the same narrator and follow that narrator through various cases. But I love reading series like that, but I'm not particularly interested in writing one, because what I like writing about is the huge turning points in the narrator's life, this moment where everything comes together, the barrier between personal and professional breaks down, who they are comes into question, and they know that whatever they decide at this moment, it's going to transform the rest of their life. Now, for real people, you don't get that many of those moments in one lifetime. So either I can like keep dumping my poor narrator into these huge life-transforming crossroads with every book, in which case he's going to be in a straitjacket by about book four, or else I could follow the more standard series path and follow the narrator through kind of the more minor ups and downs of life, which again doesn't interest me that much to write, or else I could switch narrator. So I decided to do the narrator switch. Also gives me more room thematically, because there are only a certain number of themes and concerns and underlying motifs that are core to any one person's life, that are really at the heart of who they are and what they're dealing with. And if you stick with the same character, then you risk, if you explore different themes, you risk the book becoming thematically disconnected from the character. And I think that always weakens it. So the fact that I'm moving from character to character and expanding this world every time means that I get to explore different themes without disconnecting the book from the character, because a different theme can be core to each character.
I like what Laura Miller said in her review of The Trespasser in The New Yorker, that in most crime fiction, the mystery is who is the murderer, and in The Trespasser, and for that matter, all of the books in your Dublin Murder Squad series, the mystery is who is the detective. Not his or her name. I mean, you. It's not an unknown narrator.
Yeah.
But what makes them who they are? You know, is that an accurate characterization of? I mean, I think you touched on it in the answer to the previous question, but is that accurate?
Yeah, I think Laura Miller is amazing the way she puts her finger on stuff, because I think if I had to distill down what I'm trying to do into one sentence, that would probably be it. It is about who is the detective and them trying to come to terms with that and them trying to fight their way towards whoever they want to be and discover who it is that they are underneath. So, yeah, I absolutely love that. I never put it in those terms before, but that's very much what I'm trying to do. Each of the detectives comes to a case where detectives have very good barriers in place between the personal and the professional. They have to. I mean, they're dealing with such terrible stuff that if they, those barriers weren't solid, they would melt down within months. But there's always going to be that case that gets past the barrier and that reaches the heart of who this person is and makes them question it, makes them reevaluate absolutely everything. And that's the case I'm trying to write about. And that is at the heart of the mystery. It isn't, I'm not focused on whodunit so much. I mean, a lot of the time, I think it's fairly clear to a good chunk of the readers whodunit, not necessarily early on, but well before the big revelation. The big question is, what's the detective going to discover about himself or herself, and what's he or she going to do about it?
Let's talk about a little bit about Antoinette Conway, who is the lead investigator in the murder of Aslynn Murray in The Trespasser. We meet her for the first time in The Secret Place, which is told from the perspective of her partner, Stephen Moran. So my question is about Antoinette. My first question about Antoinette, let's say, is her relationship with paternalism. You know, it's not a spoiler to say that she's never even met her father. And she bristles at paternalism and the idea that you must know your father, which, of course, puts her in conflict with the, not conflict, but it makes her conflicted about the investigation at hand. But she's the only woman on Murder Squad, and it spills over into her opinion of the victim. And part of me wants that to be a manifesto of women crime fiction writers overall, or am I just reading way too much into this?
For me, it wasn't really specifically about the fact that she's a woman. For me, it comes down to the fact that the Murder Squad, or any squad of detectives, is going to be very much about power and control, regardless of sex, regardless of gender, because that's their stock and trade. For a detective, that's what you've got, is the ability to make people do what's against their best interests, to control a situation to the point where a reluctant witness feels like they have no option but to tell you the information, where a suspect feels like they have no option but to confess. Any murder squad is going to be, to such a huge extent, about power and about who controls the narrative. That's the big question, is what is the story that's being told here and who gets to decide that? And for Antoinette, the fact that her father left before she was born and her mother spent her childhood telling her stories about who he was, none of which were in any way true, that's come to be a huge core fact of her life. The idea that anybody else might try to define your narrative, might try to write your story for you and decide who you are within it, sets her bristling, sets her furious and just ready to spit with anger. And that's why she has problems with Aisling from the first, as they discover that Aisling let her missing father, who ran off when she was 10, let him, the fact of his being gone, let that define her every action, as we gradually discover as the book goes on. I'm not going to go into details for spoilery reasons. That's what Antoinette finds absolutely infuriating about her, is the fact that she's allowing somebody else's actions to write her story, cast her within that story, decide who she is. So I think paternalism, more in the more general sense, where it's not just about sex, it's about one person trying to take over another's narrative. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense, and it also speaks to her relationship with the other detectives. She may or may not see creatures in the grass that are there or not there. I mean, she you used a great word. She bristles. She bristles pretty constantly.
She really does.
At slights both imagined and real. But at the same time, she has a marvelous instinct for bullshit and for seeing through. And she, interestingly to me, she could see, she knew this about herself. She could see it. And yet it still happened. She's a very self-aware person.
She's self-aware, but she's not particularly introspective, which are slightly different things. And I think that's one of the things that she's dragged kicking and screaming to in the course of the book, is a certain level of introspection, is of seeing, hang on, to what extent was I trying to do the same thing that infuriates me so? To what extent was I trying to rule the narrative to the point where it no longer has any relationship with reality? She has been made so paranoid, not just by this thing with her mother telling stories, but also by a bad relationship with the squad, who are, so, to some level, which isn't clear, engaged in a campaign of harassment, nasty pranks, outright sabotage against her, that she's got to the point where she's not completely sure how much is her paranoia and how much is reality. And she's constructed a narrative for herself in which she is, yeah, the beleaguered warrior fighting off challenges from every side. And it's only over the course of the book that she starts to question whether that is in fact the narrative that's going on in reality or whether she's superimposing her own on top of it.
So we met her in the secret place when the story was being told from her partner's perspective. And I have to ask, at what point does a secondary character step into the fore in your imagination and say to you, you know, me next.
Sometimes, I mean, Antoinette was just fun to write because she does not give one single shit about what anybody else thinks or wants from her. And most of us do put a certain amount of effort into balancing outside needs with our own needs and outside opinions with our own opinions. Antoinette doesn't. And that's a lot of fun to write when you do put the energy into it, to write somebody who has no intention of doing it any time. And that's fun to write. So from quite early on, I was thinking about Antoinette maybe being next up. But there's always a stage in a book, sort of two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through, where my mind starts wanting to do absolutely anything else except what I'm supposed to be doing, which is write this book. So I start going, you know, I really should clean the oven. That would be fun. Or, you know, I should look what's in those boxes. Or, hey, maybe I should put braids on the cat. And one of the things, luckily, that my mind does at that phase is bounce out ideas for a new book, anything to distract me from the one I'm supposed to be writing, right? And so that was the point where actual ideas for Antoinette, where she might go, started to surface at that kind of two-thirds, three-quarters point. But I knew early on that she was fun to write.
So that leads me to a question that's usually my last question, but isn't quite. Have we met the main character for your next novel?
No. I'm doing something a little bit different this time. The main character is not a detective. He hasn't shown up in any of the other novels. There is a murder in there because I don't know how to write a book without dumping a dead body in there to get the action moving. But he's just a normal guy, normal nice guy, who at the lowest point in his life finds himself in the middle of a murder investigation. And he has to figure out not just what he's supposed to do about it, but also how exactly he got there in the first place.
But will some of our familiar Murder Squad characters show up?
I'm not actually far enough on even to be sure. I mean, there are going to have to be murder detectives seeing this, here's this dead body. But I'm not actually sure who would be the right person yet. So I'm kind of writing it and figuring it out as I go.
I want to take a step away from The Trespasser for a second and talk about crime fiction as a whole. And you, there have been a number of articles written about you and about Megan Abbott, who had a fantastic book this year, and of course Val McDermott and Denise Mina. And to me, fans of crime fiction, especially fans of crime fiction who are women, are kind of scratching their heads at all the attention that female crime fiction writers are all of a sudden getting. You know, it's sort of like, wow, women who write crime fiction, who'd have thunk it? When in fact, as we know from Sarah Weinman's fantastic anthology she did of crime fiction, women crime fiction writers of the 40s and 50s, they've been around about as long as the genre. Why do you think women are having a big moment right now, aside from the fact that there really has been a spectacular crop of books in the past 2 or 3 years? But is it a moment or is it a permanent state, which is what it should be?
I think with crime fiction, women have always been right at the heart of the genre. I mean, you look at Agatha Christie and Dorothy Sayers and Patricia Highsmith and Josephine Tay, and right up through Patricia Cornwell and people. In all the different phases of the genre, there have been women right there on the forefront, right there on the heart of it. I think at the moment, the reason it's getting so much attention is because it's kind of a high moment for psychological crime fiction. And for whatever reason, why that's by no means a totally female genre. I mean, if you look at things like Dennis Lehane's Mystic River is one of the great psychological crime novels. But I think for whatever reason, psychological crime, there have been a lot of women involved in psychological crime. I mean, look at Laura Lippman. She's one of the great pioneers of the subgenre. And there is Megan Abbott, there's Sophie Hannah. There are a huge number of women coming up with psychological crime fiction. So I think it's more because this genre, Gillian Flynn, for God's sake, with Gone Girl and all of hers, which are just amazing. I think it's because of that, because that genre, that subgenre, has only really kind of come into its own over the past decade. And because for whatever reason women gravitate towards that, it's getting a lot of attention because it's evolving so much.
Sarah Weinman calls it domestic suspense, which I think is a great way of describing, especially Girl on the Train and Gone Girl, or as I like to call them, the girl books. With no judgment. It's just they're all fantastic.
I don't know. I think that's kind of a side thing of the psychological crime. You do get other ones that aren't, like, I don't think mine, for example, are particularly domestic at all. I think the domestic suspense is one facet of the psychological mystery thing, but I don't want to let the others get left out along the way, you know?
Oh, no, absolutely. No, I just was, I was thinking specifically of Gone Girl and Girl on the Train as domestic suspense thrillers. You just, they're, you know, talk about the delight and the tyranny of the unreliable narrator. They're just...
Oh, yes.
They just take you along this ride that you know, you both... You know, you sort of dread picking up the book because it's so dizzying, and then you're sucked into the ride and you can't get off. So that's the way I think of it. I want to ask one last question, and that's about prizes. And my first time I went to Bloody Scotland, which was their inaugural meeting, they had this faux trial, and Ian Rankin did this brilliant defense of genre, so-called genre fiction, being nominated for the Man Booker, with sort of this feeling like it was a pie in the sky. And then lo and behold, Graham McRae Burnett's book, His Bloody Project, is on the short list. So, I mean, you know, the Sympathizer won both the Pulitzer and the Edgar, and I just was wondering, has the dam finally broken? I mean, I see no reason why any of your books couldn't make it onto the Man Booker shortlist.
Well, thank you very much. Because, I would certainly hope that that boundary, which never really existed to begin with, let's be honest, it was more a perception than a reality, but I really hope that boundary is finally starting to go. Because it's always been a stereotype that, oh, you know, the genre books have gripping plots and kind of workmanlike language and two-dimensional characterization, and they're a nice little disposable read, and the literary books have beautiful language and thematic depth and not much plot and kind of wander around and get a little bit up their own holes. But that's never actually been the truth. And I think that more and more people are coming to the recognition that there are books out there that do say, well, I want to offer my readers all of it. I want to give them gripping plots and three-dimensional characterization and thematic depth and beautiful language and atmosphere. And whether I succeed in that or not, that's what I'm aiming to do. And I think more and more people are coming to terms with the fact that there are writers who do aim to do that, and that there's no reason why they shouldn't. That the fact that there's a dead body in a book doesn't necessarily make it cheap throwaway material. I mean, if you look at Donna Tartt's The Secret History, That is an amazing murder mystery that you cannot put down. The first time I read it, I think a bomb could have gone off in the house and I wouldn't have put it down. But it is also an amazing literary novel. And I think once you've got stuff like that out there, it becomes harder and harder to argue for the existence of that borderline.
Well said. Thank you so much for your time and for joining us. And once again, congratulations on Pub Day for The Trespasser. And now that those of us who have finished reading it, we're just going to have to wait for the next Tana French book.
Thank you so much for having me on.